Hi, Sam Bailey here from the Radio Academy to introduce this week's podcast, which is another live episode recorded at the podcast show last month. Zach and Jules were the winners of the coveted Best New Presenter Award at this year's ARIAs for their work on the Life After Prison podcast. It's the second year running that National Prison Radio have won that award, testament, I think, to that organisation's ability to develop and nurture raw talent so well. We featured Life After Prison in an earlier episode of this podcast back in January when Christian spoke to Zach and Jules and their producer Beth. It's worth checking that out. I wonder if they had any idea what was coming up. They would have been working on their ARIAs entry when they did that interview, which is nice to think about. But to bring things up to date, at the podcast show, Zach and Jules sat down with Observer audio critic and fellow of the Radio Academy, Miranda Sawyer.
Hi everybody, it's lovely to see you. Great to see a nice full room. My name's Miranda Sawyer. I'm the audio critic from The Observer, and I'm here with Zach Adekadua and Jules Rowan, who are the presenters of Life After Prison. I'm going to explain a little bit about the podcast before we get into the conversation. Essentially, Life After Prison is two podcasts. There's one called The Sit Down and one called Getting Out. Getting Out is shorter, and that's really with advice for people who are coming out of prison, right?
Yep.
And then The Sit Down is an in-depth interview, often up to about an hour. It's a longer interview with people who have kind of had, and should we say, some interaction with the justice system. Yes. That's what we normally say, isn't it? Yeah. So it could be ex-prisoners, but also people who've got family in prisons. And professionals. You've interviewed the chief probation officer, Sonia Flynn. Yeah. You've interviewed your own mum. Yeah. You've interviewed poet and TEDx speaker, Lady Unchained.
And Jules' dad as well now.
Is this for the new series?
Yeah.
Amazing. So this is brilliant. So anyway, I also just wanted to say, just as we start, that Zach and Jules started a year ago, and just 2 weeks ago, so that's like within a year, they won Best New Presenters at the ARIAs. So I think we should give them a round of applause.
Thank you.
So it is a big year for you. You started a year ago. You both kind of just out on license. There was an extensive audition process, and now you've done two series. Your third series starts today. You've won Best New Presenters.
And the Grassroots Awards as well.
So that's like, I mean, it's a massive journey. It's a really big journey. What do you think you've learned in that year?
A lot. Massive amounts. I think obviously myself and Zach, we've both been inside, and to have been in prison, to have come out, to be doing something we're really passionate about, and then to be on a massive stage at the ARIAs in front of so many people winning Best New Presenter, it's like undescribable. I can't really say how incredible it is, and we've learned so much on the way. Just the people that we've interviewed, it's incredible.
Yeah. What about you, Zach? What do you feel like you've learned?
I've learned that you can make a difference in someone's life without knowing that you are. Like the messages that we get, the responses we get from people inside that watch it and people that come out and their families.
Yeah.
It really reminds us of why we're doing this, and it makes it worthwhile. You know, you get people saying, oh, like professionals, they're like, we listen to your podcast on the way to work. Because it helps us to understand the people that we're dealing with, what their experiences are.
So by professionals, you mean like prison officers?
Like prison officers and support workers, support staff. That really reminds us what we're doing and how much of a difference we can make. And the main thing I think I've learned is that there's an art to a good interview. You know this.
Yeah, interviewing skills.
You know this, you're really good.
It's not easy. But we're getting
what
better.
Would you say the art is? Because I think your interviews are really good, actually. But what would you say your art is?
Making the guests feel comfortable with us. I think we do that naturally anyway, because we're just cool like that. but making a safe space for someone to tell their truth comfortably, you know, and listening.
Yeah.
You know, that's from our producer, Beth. She's really good at that. She's like, really listen to what they're saying, you know?
Yeah.
And we're like, yeah. And that response, you know, and sometimes we've got questions scripted, but what I love sometimes is when a guest says something, can you unpick it? So you're like, oh, so tell us a bit more about that. What was that like for you? Or how did you get over what you've just mentioned? And that creates nice little moments Yeah.
And of those conversations, because you have done a lot, I mean, you've done two series, the third one, which is pre-recorded most of it, yes. Right? It's all done.
And so it's visual as well.
And visual
so
as well.
It's on YouTube as well, so you can actually see the moments that, and yeah, it really adds to the audio, if that makes sense.
Yeah, because I mean, it's interesting to me. I sat in on the first, I think it was the first one where you interviewed your mum.
Yes.
And another lady who's called Tracy, who's who has two sons in prison. Mm. And I mean, that what's interesting about interviews is it's not a conversation. No. So it's not like you normally talk to your mum. You're asking her questions and she's giving you answers that you don't normally get.
And that interview was the first time that me and my mum spoke about the prison experience for both of us.
Yeah, so there are certain things that you would just wouldn't expect to like even speak about or to come up, but you know, it's about somebody's life and what they've gone through and what how they felt. So things come up all the time that you wouldn't have even it wouldn't be scripted.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It can't be scripted.
So for example, there's a woman called Tassie Gilani. Yeah. She's now the national lived experience lead for HMPPS,
which is the probation service.
Yeah, the prison and probation service. And she was saying something like along the lines of, in prisons where I found my voice, I found who I was and I became this new person, and prison saved my life. And it sounds weird hearing that, but you could see from the conversation in the context of it how much of that prison experience had an impact on her positively, you know, and helped her change her life. And those little moments that we get in the interviews, we have some guests that talk about, you know, traumatic things that happened to them and how they've overcome it. And you can really see the strength from people. It's when we interview people, it's not from a position of like, oh, we're in fascination, or it's from a position of strength, you know, from a position of respect and understanding. So those moments that they share something that we didn't plan or we didn't know about is the beautiful moments that we remember.
And how we can talk about those things but also have so much banter. Like we can be laughing, and even on the podcast we could be laughing at, it's not, which is great because, you know, life is not so serious and sad, and what everyone or a lot of people might think about people that have been into prison or prison. It's you know, it doesn't have to always be like that.
I just wanted to ask you quickly, what was life like leading up to those offences, if you don't mind sharing?
Yeah, it was crazy, honestly. I sit and I speak to my best friend about it the other day, and we talk about it as though it's like this thing, and we reminisce quite numb to the experiences because you just become so desensitized to life after a while. But I was kind of sat there and actually like really looking back through my life, and before I had the opportunity to get removed from it. And I always say, like, going into prison, it saved my life because I would have ended up dead, or I would have ended up committing a way worse crime and probably still being there now and not being able to be the Tassie that sat in front of you. But it's situations that nobody as a child should ever be in.
And who is your audience? You mean you mentioned obviously that you've got kind of professionals listening and prisoners and ex-prisoners listening. Is there a wider audience that you've found that people have got in touch?
University students who are like studying criminology and psychology. We get messages from people whose partners are inside. And they're like, oh, your podcast is really good. It helps us to understand what they're going through.
You hit the nail on the head with people that have been into prison is our audience, and people that have been affected by the criminal justice system. But we're seeing more and more people that haven't been inside or don't know anyone that's been inside but can relate to stories in some form and some way. And it's quite incredible how they can interlink. Is that right, Will?
Yes.
A lot of it, I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? Because a lot of it is about, you know, this is a cliche of an interview, but it's about a journey, isn't it? You start off one way, then something happens and you change. And I've been really struck by a lot of the interviews that's what's happened. Sometimes it happens in prison, sometimes it happens out of prison. But a lot of your interviewees, that's what's happened, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, the thing about prison is, like, we can say put the positives and negatives about the system and rehabilitation, but what we find the common denominator is there's a spark inside, there's a change in mindset, there's a eureka moment, or there's
Beautiful.
An epiphany, you know. There's a moment where it just clicks for that person and they decide to do like a whole 180 and go the other way. But even though that's the common denominator, how it happens and the way it happens is different, and that's the beauty of everyone's story. That's that unique point.
Obviously, it doesn't always happen, you know, it really doesn't. And there are so many people that you see inside that it probably won't happen, and it is sad. And you would, like, for some people that have seen the 180, you'd really want to help, you know, certain people. But this is why we love doing what we do, because it's giving more and more people hope that, you know, good things are out there and there are good things to come.
Yeah, there was a message that we got from a young lad who's in Feltham. Because
these podcasts play inside prison as well.
Yes.
Obviously, they can't.
They can watch them if they're on the digital hub as well.
On YouTube?
Yeah. No, there's like an internal hub.
It's like an intranet.
Yeah, it's like an intranet.
Okay, so only certain things you can watch.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
They got to be HMP approved.
Or it's played on the radio station so you can hear it.
Yeah.
Inside.
So there was a kid from, I say kid, he's a young man. I think he was about 17 or 18. And he was like, listen, I've been listening to your podcast, watching them, and they've really helped me change my behavior in here. You know, I want to behave, I want to do something, I want to give back, and you guys are giving me that inspiration, that motivation to change my life. So I'm looking forward to coming out now and starting my new chapter of my life. And, you know, when someone's saying that from inside, it really makes me feel like this is worthwhile, because that's the impact. That's what matters, you know, someone coming out and making that change. And
but if you think about people that have gone aside, a natural feeling is, okay, they're a really bad person and they've done a really bad thing, and, you know, they should be there. And that's it. And that's when you're actually inside and you're involved and you've been there yourself, you realise that that is not the case. Like, a lot of people didn't mean to be there, or they didn't have the upbringing. Maybe somebody else did, or, you know,
there's always a circumstance.
There's always a reason.
A question. Yeah,
yeah, with majority of people, let's just say majority. Yes, I can't vouch for like everything. Yeah, I'm not going to. But these people can just see another way or whatever, then that's massive. That's massive.
Yeah. And what happened to you two? Because I know that, like, I mean, I know your story, so I know what happened. But do you want to just talk us through a little bit? Like, so I know that for you, Jules, that when you were in prison, what helped you was actually getting into fitness, and that was your way out, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was my way out. So instead of being, so I spent 2.5 years inside, and from the get-go, I just needed to move my body. I just had to move. So that got me kind of down the fitness road. But I realized along the way that this was my kind of escape. Like, I didn't want to be on the wing with people. Like, I needed to make something of myself and change and make my life better on the out. And the only way I knew I could do that is I just need to sort myself out. And fitness was, it was my escape. It was my go. It was every single day. I didn't chill with people on the wing. I was training. I got my level one, my level two, and then my personal trainer in there as well, which meant when I came out, I could actually be a personal trainer, and I still am, alongside doing the podcast, which is, yeah, it's everything. It's changed my whole life. Yeah.
I remember you telling me that you were just marching up and down the cell, getting your 10,000 in.
It was awful. I couldn't even track 10,000.
How many steps was your cell?
I didn't even.
No, she remembers the steps.
Yeah, I did. I was a bit of a geek, and I was just like, it was 7 steps one way, 7 steps back, and I just paced up and down, because you couldn't go anywhere else. But I did not even know what a 10,000 step thing was. Like, I had no idea about how to move my body properly and how to train. But PT, so it worked.
Yeah, perfect. And Zach, for you, you had 3 different spells, and actually, it was during the second one that you decided to change, right?
Yes. So the second time,
he doesn't like saying it.
No. You know it is, because it sounds a bit strange. Like, what, it was the third, what, 3 times? Then you had to learn your lesson. But sometimes it goes like that, you know. So the second time, I was determined not to come back to prison, but life happens, and I got sucked back into that lifestyle. But I came away from it, and which is, I think, good for me that there was an operation going on, and I ended up being part of that operation, that police operation, and I came back for the third time. But I had made a transition in my life already. So whilst
mentally,
yes. So and I got a job, and I was working. I moved out the area that I was living in before. So I was building new friendship networks, and then I'm back inside with faces I've seen before, my other prison sentences, and friends from my old area. So it's like, how real is your change going to be? It's like a test now. Are you really going to stick to this transformation? Are you really this new person? And they could see that. They're like, yeah, you're actually different now. So the conversations that I was having inside with the lads is different. It's like, what can we do after this? How can we show young people that there's a better way? And those conversations and understanding people's interests and the talents that they have in there, you can be more and show, and you can do more. So I came out kind of on a mission to like showcase that and speak to young people and really show that we can be more than just a prison number.
Yeah. And you're involved in a lot of social enterprise organisations now, aren't you, as well as the podcast?
Yeah, so I work with Social Arc. I've got my own organisation, X Conversation, which basically supports young people who are deemed at risk of offending, or they've come out of the system or secure state. And it's really about, like we said, mindset, focusing on mindset and giving them opportunities and supporting them into positive pathways. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that's really interesting about your two podcasts is one is obviously the in-depth thing so that people understand what that journey is, but then the very practical one, you know, the kind of like, this is how you go about it. What would you say to somebody that hadn't listened to that particular podcast, which it, then what would be the hardest thing for people when they come out that you're trying to help them with? I mean, is it housing? Is it jobs? I mean, there's a lot, or, you know, friends. There's a lot of different things, isn't there?
It's a really good question. And I think there are, I think everybody might say something different that go in. So I think you've got the practical stuff, like, okay, how do I disclose my offence? When should I? How should I? Should I? Like, really? Yeah. I really struggled with that one, to be fair. You've got housing, you've got mental health, you know, staying on track with your recovery. And we cover, like, those topics. And I would say everyone's different, but, you know, you've got so many other things that aren't, like, practical that I really struggled with. And
yeah,
we've spoken about this so many times that we really, yeah, that we both really struggled with. For example, just being around a lot of people, not knowing who to talk to because you don't have anybody to talk to. And it just kind of all builds up. So there's like that emotional kind of head mental state, yeah, that like, I think only really get touched on if you have conversations about it and speak to people that have maybe
been through it.
There's no blueprint. You can put in the plan, you can do as much prep as you want, but you can't explain it.
And they don't prep you for like getting out.
There's not much support, if we're honest, to when you're getting out of prison in the system. So life kind of just hits you like a heavyweight punch, you know, and it spins you for a bit.
You're so graphic.
No, that's my analogy.
It's great. It's great.
So like, for example, you know, housing's a big one. That's the main thing, I think. That's the, where you're going to stay. If you're coming out with no fixed abode, then it can push you back towards the life that you're trying to move away from. Also, the little things that no one prepares you for, like what Jules says, being in crowds. It was a while before I could be on the tube, like packed in around so many people, because we're not used to that. You know, being in massive shopping centres and everyone's around. Me and Jules have spoke about this, but you kind of feel like you've got ex-prisoner stamped on your forehead, and it's like, is everyone looking at me? Why is everyone looking at me? And it's those little things, and explaining what prison's like to someone.
I think it's a normal thing for people to have to like adapt and transition and stuff like that. But unless you're going through the transition, you really don't actually know what it feels like, and no one can really prepare you for that. But because it's not really spoken about, it's not normal. It's not a normalization to be like, oh yeah, I just got out of prison. Like, how you feeling? Yeah, I'm all right. Struggling with this. Yeah, like, it's almost like, okay, don't say anything. And I got told a lot, you know, when you come up, or when I got out, you know, I went straight from being in a prison gym to being in a big gym, you know. I was in a Virgin Active, so it was big. Like, I was like, whoa. And, you know, I was kind of told not to say anything or not tell my clients. So automatically that makes you think, okay, this is not good. This is not a good thing.
Yeah, it makes you feel ashamed.
Well, yeah, it does. And that is just the way it is. So, you know, we're really trying to help break that stigma, because there are people like me and Zach that have been in and just want to live.
So, I mean, I've said that also you've spoken to kind of quite high up people within the system, you know, including Sonia Flynn, who's the chief probation officer. And what struck me about that interview is you ask questions that other people don't ask, obviously, because you're coming from a different angle. Did you enjoy that interview?
Yes. we've also interviewed like the CEO of HMPPS as well.
And is that one coming out?
Yeah, that's in series 3.
Okay.
Yeah.
Starts today.
Yeah. It starts today.
YouTube and Spotify and all of that.
Do you know what? They're really interesting conversations, because like there are so many answers. There's so many questions that people in prison have. And then when you come out, there's so many questions. There's like, the system just doesn't run smoothly. Like it really doesn't. And it's really hard work, and it's confusing, and and it's like your head's just everywhere. So to have like just clarification, and for even to hear that there's a lot of they hate me, they want me to go back inside, you know, from a prisoner's aspect.
Yeah, they're trying to restrict my life, they want to control me.
Do you know what I mean? But like generally, people aren't bad hearted. Like they're just out there they have a job to do, and maybe the system doesn't run smoothly, but you know, it's really nice to hear that perspective for even people like us to be like, oh my gosh, okay, you don't hate me, you don't want me to go back inside, you're generally trying to help, but it's just not working in here.
Yeah, so like the system is not necessarily working perfectly,
and to understand the challenges from their side as well.
Like that's important for people to know that, because if we don't understand actually what your role is or what your job is or what your belief is,
then if you're not just there to lock the cell, it's building a relationship.
That's fundamental, like building a relationship.
As a minimum, we're supposed to start really contacting people on short sentences right from the beginning of their sentence.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. Okay. And on those people who are serving longer sentences, that contact should start about 6 months before release, at least. And I know there'll be people out there going, well, I didn't hear from anyone until 2 weeks before I was due out. And that's not how it should work. But that's the reality of where we've been in terms of not having enough probation staff. I mean, you hear in the news all the time, there aren't enough doctors, there aren't enough nurses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's no
there aren't
national
enough probation officers.
But there's no national outcry for that, is there?
Well, I mean, most of the population have some experience of what it's like to go to hospital, waiting times for your GP. But it's only those individuals that go through the criminal justice system that experience shortages in probation.
Well, we're coming to the end. I just want to say thank you so much for coming along. I hope we have a lovely day at the, you know, the madness that is out there. But this is Zach, this is Jules. They are fab. They are the best new presenters in the UK. Oh. And their podcasts are brilliant.
Congratulations to Zach and Jules. Thank you to Miranda Sawyer for hosting that talk for us. And my thanks to Stephanie Hurst for the edit this week. Next week, we've got a new host joining the podcast, Tim Cocker. He of Virgin Radio and Rugby on the Telly and the Egg Chasers Rugby podcast. He'll be taking over the podcast hot seat for the summer. I wonder what he has in store. We'll find out. Don't forget our summer socials at the end of this month, mostly taking place in the week of 26th of June, including our London Summer Garden Party, absolutely free for Radio Academy members, and membership costs just £3 a month. All the details on our website, radioacademy.org. See you there.